You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Can only come from you. Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it's not, and you have to do it, even though here in Atlanta it's hot as hell, you got to get it done. And I know you'll do it safely. So get it done, brothers and sisters. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. When you, at the top of the page, you'll see podcasts. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, on Mondays from 6 to 8 p.m. on all times they're going to give our Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds, hosted by Brother Jahad Ahmed, brother in Philadelphia, Acres of Diamonds. And that's followed by, from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then that's followed from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report from 8 to 9 on Wednesday. From 8 to 9 on Wednesday, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening, brothers and sisters. That's right. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening on Fridays. Saturday from 7, Friday from 7 to 9, excuse me, Saturday from 4 to 6, Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then Saturday from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. Brother Vomani Tahembe is in Ghana. Yesterday, of course, was African Liberation Day, and he and his tour group spent it in Ghana. And if you want to check out the pictures, previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to check out videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. He has a trip upcoming in November, November 18th through the 29th to Tanzania. Then again in Ghana, December 24th to January 5th to Ghana. And then next year, April 1st to April 11th in Senegal and Gambia. All trips are $3,700 per person. Believe me, go to the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, because everything you need to have a trip of a lifetime is there. All information is there, the documentations you need, the shots,
the visas, whatever the case may be, it is right there for you. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Baba Renoko Rashidi, he has a trip upcoming, of course. He has a trip coming to Ghana, July 18th through August 3rd. And then he'll be going from leaving that trip, going to Kemet, to Egypt, July 31st to August 13th. Both of those trips are, I think, $4,200. He has a program this Friday, May 28th, and from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Eastern. And that's Eastern time, because I know he's on the West Coast. So, and then one at 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Saturday. The African Roots of Humanity and Civilization. This is a Eventbrite program. So go to Renoko, drrenoko.com, and then you can check out what he's going to be presenting, drrenoko.com. Habesha Incorporated.org. Habesha Works, all the programs that they provide. These brothers and sisters are doing the work. Habesha Works, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Urban Green Jobs, Golden Growers, you name it, they're doing it. And they're doing it on the continent with the Kashi Project. The great pictures you'll see when you go to the website on the progress on the Kashi Project in Ghana. Habesha Works, HabeshaIncorporated.org. The LEDGE program. The LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. Also, too, when you go to the ledgegroup.com, go to the ledgegroup.com, they're offering a raffle of a trip to Tanzania, a safari valued at $15,000, a seven-day African safari in Ashura, Tanzania. Check that out. Of course, the Ledge Group, they deal in the four areas of people and human development, that is food, water, clothing, and shelter, the essentials that are desperately needed. They're doing projects, and they have 12 projects going on in six different countries. They employ over 170 people, and they have over 260 members. You should become a member of the Ledge Group. The Ledge Group. Bibi Atumi. ABIBITUMI.com. BibiAtumi.com. They have their Saturday series this Saturday. And I know I just had it here. Let me find it. Well, I tell you, sometimes I just don't know. That's this Saturday, the 29th. The series is Legacies and the Impact of Transatlantic Captive Trade on African Diaspora, this Saturday, and that is at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time from 1 to 4. Okay. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar, located here in Atlanta on Ralph David Abernathy in the West End, with healthy fruit drinks and smoothies and soups and sandwiches, all kinds of good stuff. And on weekends, they have vegan food that you can purchase on Saturday and Sunday at Wadada's. Wadada's is located right across the street from Soul Veg, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays. The Shrine of the Black Madonna is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. You can pick up all kinds of things, good things, aside from books, furniture, you name it. The Shrine of the Black Madonna. The Medu Bookstore, I stopped by yesterday to talk with Mama Nia. She looks great. The store looks beautiful, and it's right there on the main thoroughfare at the Greenbrier Mall. So come and check it out. There's a few closings since the pandemic. The anchors are not there anymore, but hey, let's hope the only way that the other parts of the stores won't close if we don't support them. The bottom line is always we must support each other. So check out the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call if you're looking for a book. If she doesn't have it, she'll get it for you. The number is 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. She has the finest selections of postcards, greeting cards, books, T-shirts, figurines, you name it. She's got it, and the store is beautiful. It's well-stocked. So check out the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, that is east of here of Atlanta. Brother Gazimde Ajamu, he developed a coffee bar selling that delicious Cameroon Boyo. What a good, delicious coffee that is, at least as far as I'm concerned. Give Brother Gazimde a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. Brothers and sisters, there is light in the Black Dot. Us lifting us tomorrow night, their Thursday night broadcast, Us Lifting Us, on Blog Talk Radio. Go to blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us, /ULU. The name of the program is Dare to Win. That's every Thursday night from 9 to 10. If you want to call just to listen, cool. If you want to call to give questions, comments, or concerns, dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. That's Sun Goddess Sense. Give our sister, Shelly Amonset, a call at 404-434-7963. 404-434-7963. All kinds of good stuff. T-shirts, scents, incense, grooming, stuff that you may need for your beard or whatever. All that good stuff is right there. T-shirts. Sun Goddess Scents, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay Dash Aidi, Sister Gabrielle really is doing an outstanding job in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. So give her, go to her website at Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash Haiti, A-Y-I-T-I.org. She does a fantastic job with those young brothers and sisters. When you look at that website and see what they're doing in terms of education, what they're doing in terms of the health care for their children, entrepreneurship, and sustainable agriculture. Outstanding. Sanjay dash Haiti. Akabit Institute. Baba Baruti and Brother and Mama Yabaruti, Akabin Institute. And let me see, where is that at? Here it is, right here. Brothers and sisters, Akabin Institute has been educating our young children and need your support. I'm not even going to give the P.O. box because a lot of people not going to do that, but I'll give you the Cash App. Go to Cash App, put in the dollar sign, Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And then make your donations. If you can make them consistently, that would be great. It's all a big help. Akabin Institute. He's a prolific writer. And so go to akabinhouse.com. Akabinhouse.com for many of the books that Baba Baruti writes. So now, the Inye Sesim, one of the books that Baba Baruti puts together. Inye Sesim. Oh, let me finish that up with the complementarity conference coming up. The 7th annual complementarity conference, Saturday, next week, Saturday, June 5th, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. online. Okay, $10 per adult, $5 per teen, and make your donation via PayPal account, which is yabaruti at Yahoo, they only have the PayPal account on this. So make your donation, $10 or $5, via PayPal, yabaruti, Baruti, at yahoo.com. Include the pertinent information, of course, is complimentarity conference, your name, and your email address so you can receive the link for the Complementarity Conference next week, Saturday, the 7th annual. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought, May 25th. And now it's winter. It's winter in America. and all of the healers have been killed or been betrayed. Yeah, but the people know. People know. It's winter. Lord knows it's winter in America. And ain't nobody fighting because nobody knows what to save. Save your souls. Gil Scott Heron. In every situation, every discussion, every disagreement, every rumor forces the choices of sides. Then we will end up as nothing but silly, blindly antagonistic, even more self-hating fragments. Amidst all the positivity, we must concede that constant infighting, bickering, and unconstructive criticism among a politically disempowered and disorganized people is not a sign of strength or progress. It's the exact opposite. If anything, it signals that they are in an accelerated state of demise, because if they have the intelligence and freedom to infight, bicker, and unconstructively criticize each other, they have the same energy to do the opposite. If we are free to choose our political path, then chaos is a choice, and those involved are unwisely choosing to expend that energy in a regressive, wasteful, self-defeating fashion. Behaving so says that they would prefer a pretense to power than to actually work collectively towards power, even in the face of proven, determined, murderous enemies. And although nothing, no situation beyond recovery, any fall must be appreciated and acted against in order for it to not become permanent. Affirm, I am prepared for winter. Affirm, I am prepared for winter. May 26. Expressions of unity and solidarity by a people in their struggle for self-determination are fundamental components of nationalism. Alfonso Pinckney. If they and their kin knew, if they and their kin own all, or the vast majority of the stores we shop in and the name brands which we buy in them, it is really logical to assume that they could really care less if we boycotted one or another, or even a chain of their stores. They, as a people who are one, still fully exploit us no matter which business we shop at or what we buy in them. In business, other words, in order to be effective in removing their exploitive and captive economic hold over our resources, our currency, our money, we would have to boycott them all. We would have to hold each other accountable for the nationalist spirit well worded by Chuck D in his declaration. The best way to boycott is to build your own, I say. History consistently reminds us that there is no partial solution when dealing with Urugu. They are driven to own all others. Still, most of us, even many... Sorry about that. All right. We still have to hold each other accountable for the nationalist spirit they are driven to own others. Still, most of us, even many among the so-called revolutionaries, do not want to hear this because it entails recognizing and acting on the recognition that all Urugu and their allies our enemy. Not just some, not just those who are revealed in the business or conspiracy pages, not just the ones who will get away with murdering defenseless Africans, not just the smiling faces who become brazen enough to attack their African customers, not just the mythological few bad apples, but all of them. In fact, that qualification is one of the best ways to identify a Negro. Somewhere, somehow, in their statement, you will be able to find a qualification that he or she is not talking about all white people. How is that, in any way, shape, form, or fashion, relevant to African warriorhood? Every day, my communal vision becomes clearer. Every day, my communal vision becomes clearer. I want to read this one, since I'll be leaving tomorrow for Tulsa, and I won't be back on this radio until next week, Wednesday, because I'm coming back home on Monday, but of course I'll miss that. So, yep. So I want to read this one. May 27th. All history has shown that this government will bring its police and military powers to bear on any group which truly seeks to free African people. Any African freedom organization which ignores self-defense does so at its own peril. Political prisoner, Sandiata Kole. We know that in Yoruba's reality, we'll always be outnumbered and outgunned, but that is not a reason whatsoever to accept defeat. It is a reason to act wisely and not always ourselves and not to allow ourselves or our organizations to be exposed. If we have read history, we know that it is a reason to remain below the radar because history tells us that every individual group or organization which Yoruba was able to see was systematically co-opted, nullified, or destroyed. History is supposed to teach us to know what cometh and to not continue making the same mistakes over and over again. So we have to overcome the need to be seen, heard, and applauded for work we do for African people. Yes, we must organize, organize, and organize, but we must do so way, way, way beneath the radar. We must build under the radar better than we have done above it. Along with this, know that when dealing with our adversaries, a mask of deception is appropriate. Do not offer truthful information to enemies, and do not be dismayed or hampered by those of us who should not be enemies but do not realize the influence of their treacherous and menticidal tendencies. In a society of liars, in a reality where everyone is kept in check against critiquing others by their personal history of lies, a truthful person is hated. Only speak truth to those with the capacity to respect it for what it is. Affirm, I operate within organizations who have functional active self-defense programs far beneath the radar. Affirm, I operate within organizations who have a functional activated self-defense program far beneath the radar. The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. Yes, brothers and sisters, I had a great day yesterday. Yesterday, African Liberation Day. The Pan-African Federalist Movement had a program on a Zoom call, and the program was titled "What's in a Word?" And of course, I talked about how words are used to cause confusion, or you know, within this society, we don't control. This is not our language. We don't control nothing. And so that's why there are multiple meanings to different words. Same word, same spelling, but almost like an opposite. But, you know, we have done that, too, in our history. You know, what's in a name? Not what's in a word, what's in a name? Thank you, Mama Nabantu. What's in a name? And I know that we have used words, and just like the word cool, you know. I'm quite sure when Caucasians use the word cool, after cold, now it's cool. And it's meant, it's not as cold. It's cool. It's cold outside. It's spring. It's cool. It's fall. But no, we take a word and we can run with it. It's no, that's cool. Just like bad. Of course, bad in the word is that's not good. But we flip it to the opposite. Now, that's bad, man. That's cold. That's cool, see. But in terms of the reality of the language that is used, it is designed to put something on your mind. And so therefore, when you hear the word, it gives a picture. That's why we should never call our ancestors slaves. We should never use that word to describe us because it doesn't fit the definition, number one. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We never submitted. We always fought. We resist today. So we're not slaves, a slave. But that's what they want to do. And they constantly use that word in the media, social media, all the time. Slave. That's not us. You know, there's other words too. You know, but as I said in the presentation, you know, we are Africans. just like that poem, a rose by any other name will smell just as sweet. And Dr. John Henry Clark said, well, that's cool if you're talking about roses. We're talking about people. And when you talk about a people, you must conjure up land, history, and culture. Land, history, and culture. Therefore, we are an African people. And so I propose that we begin to call ourselves Africans. We are African wherever we are. If we are in America, we are American Africans. If we are in Ghana, we are Ghanaian Africans. Brazil, Brazilian Africans. Cuban, Cuban Africans. You get the picture? Africa is the noun. There's a word that goes, which is a suffix. It's a word that goes in front of it that describes what that noun is. There's a word that goes in front of it. And so we need to begin to do that. I'll talk more about that at a later, another program. I did one program out like that some years ago, or either last year or year before, you know. But we're talking about the massacre, the Tulsa massacre. Since there's no such thing as race, race is a fallacy. Race was created by Caucasians, Europeans. In fact, you can go to the history and look up Johann Blumenbach or Carol Linnaeus. They're the ones that designed this idea of race, you know, and giving themselves a top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. And since they've imposed this on the world, people believe this, because everything that the European does, you know, people believe, just like they believe Europe is a continent. Europe ain't no damn continent by anybody's definition, especially by their own definition. It's not a continent, but because how bold they are and arrogant they are, they chose to make it a continent using the Caucasus Mountains as a divide between the eastern part of Asia as opposed to the western part of Asia. Europe. In fact, it's even, Europe is named after a sister, Europa. But that's the thing about Europeans. They dictate. They formed a narrative. That's why my contention is we reject any damn thing they say. For real. So I'm going to read a few things and play a few things because I want to play right now the hearing. I was supposed to have Brother last week Wednesday, in fact, Chief Igumawale on, who is a brother who's working in more so in the grassroots level in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you go to Tulsa, you take his tour. You know, I don't know about any other tour, but I was blessed. We were blessed to have him help guide us through what was happening in Tulsa. Gave us a clear understanding and showing us all the things that have happened and unfortunately continue to happen in Tulsa. I'm going to read from the Washington Post, reparations bill for Tulsa massacre. Once again, I never put in the word race. Just put in Tulsa massacre, introduced into Congress. He was there with three survivors in a hearing last week, Wednesday. And I'm going to play to you for you Mother Fletcher's. And she's 107 years old. She's 107 years old. So you know she can distinctly remember what went down. And being 107 years old, believe me, she's sharp. This is Mother Fletcher.
I'm a survivor of the Tulsa Race Massacre. 2 weeks ago, I celebrated my 107th birthday. Today, I'm visiting Washington, D.C. for the first time in my life. I'm here seeking justice, and I'm asking my country to acknowledge what happened in Tulsa in 1921. On May 31st in 21, I went to bed in my family's home in Greenwood, neighbors of Tulsa, the neighborhood I felt the sleeping that night was rich, not just in terms of wealth, but in culture, community, heritage, and my family had a beautiful home. We had great neighbors, and I had friends to play with. I felt safe. I had everything a child could need. I had a bright future ahead of me. Greenwood should have given me the chance to truly make it in this country. Within a few hours, all of that was gone. The night of the massacre, I was awakened by my family. My parents and 5 siblings were there. I was told we had to leave, and that was it. I will never forget the violence of the white mob when we left our home. I still see black men seen being shot, black bodies lying in the street. I still smell smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear airplanes flying overhead. I hear the screams. I have lived through the massacre every day.
My community was beautiful and was filled with happy and successful black people. Then everything changed. It was like a war. White men with guns came and destroyed my community. We couldn't understand why. What did we do to them? We didn't understand. We were just living. But they came and they destroyed everything. They burned houses and businesses. They just took what they wanted and out of the building. Then they burned the building, burned them. They murdered people. We were told they just dumped the dead bodies into the river. I remember running outside of our house. I just passed dead bodies. It wasn't a pretty sight. I still see it today in my mind 100 years later.
My childhood was hard, and we didn't have much. We worried what little we had would be stolen from us, just like it was stolen in Tulsa. You may have been taught that when something is stolen from you, you can go to the courts to be made whole. You can go to the courts to get justice. This wasn't the case for us. The courts in Oklahoma wouldn't hear us. The federal courts said we were too late. We were made to feel that our struggle was unworthy of justice, that we were less valued than whites, that we weren't fully Americans. We were shown that in the United States, not all men were equal under law. We were shown that when black voices called out for justice, no one cared.
Testimony of 3 of the survivors. The Tulsa.
The FDA just approved the Pfizer vaccine.
The CDC has cleared the way.
I'm sorry. And their story is harrowing to have witnessed it, and now these many years later, and consistently being denied justice. In murder, supposedly, in this country, there are no statutes of limitations I remember one of the things that came out of the conference back in 2001, going to Durban, South Africa, dealing with the issue of reparations, that the Atlantic captive, so-called trade, were crimes against humanity. There is no statute of limitations towards crimes against humanity. There is no statute of limitations in this country for murder. For murder. You can think you can get away with it 5 years, a decade, 2 decades. If you're finally found, you will be paid. Just like they were finding Germans in this country who were part of the European Jewish extermination or Jewish murders. And they were would be sent back to Berlin to stand trial. And so for us, though, it seems like it's always a different story. After hearing the testimony from the survivors of the 20, once again, it's not a race massacre. It's just the Tulsa massacre, like all the others. All the others. Because when you throw that in, it seems like there was a fight. There was a fight. No, these people vamped on us. They vamped on us. We recognized our situation, but we fought back. That's why I'm saying to us as a people, be proud of who we are. Be proud of our ancestors. You know, I saw a cat with a T-shirt on, I'm not my ancestors, basically saying that our ancestors, you know, would capitulate and give up and allow to be enslaved, would allow to be beaten and so forth. But I'll kick your ass. I'm not my no. That I mean, our ancestors did the same thing. But a lot of times, you know, discretion is the better part of valor. Sometimes you may not need to fight, or you better prepare to fight another day. Just like I read you the Enye Sasim earlier. You know. So. A Georgia congressperson introduced a bill Friday that would make it easier for them to seek reparations. Representative Hank Johnson, Democrat of Georgia, said the Tulsa Greenwood Massacre Claims Accountability Act provides survivors and descendants access to the courts to seek restitution for one of the worst episodes of violence in U.S. history. In the past, he said, survivors and descendants have had their claims rejected because of statute of limitations restrictions. The victims of this atrocity have been denied justice far too long, said Johnson, chairman of the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Courts, Intellectual Property, and Internet. On Wednesday, the only living survivors of this massacre, Viola Fletcher, her brother, Hughes Van Ellis, who's 100, and Miss Leslie Benningfield Randall, 106, told lawmakers what they endured a century ago. They spoke as Tulsa prepares to mark the 100th anniversary of the rampage at the end of this month. I'll never forget the violence of the white mob when we left our homes, Ms. Fletcher said. I still see black men being shot, black bodies lying in the streets. I still smell the smoke and see fire. I still see black businesses being burned. I still hear planes flying overhead. I hear the screams. Fletcher, Ellis, and Randall are the leading plaintiffs in a reparations lawsuit filed last year against the city of Tulsa and Tulsa County, the state of Oklahoma, and the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce. The lawsuit argues that Oklahoma and Tulsa are responsible for what happened during the massacre, which historians believe left as many as 300 American African people dead, 10,000 homeless and the all-African community of Greenwood destroyed. I know you've probably seen the pictures of the devastation. I mean, buildings being leveled blocks upon blocks. Their lives, their land, their liberty were stolen from them, Johnson said. And then these victims are erased from our national historical memory. This massacre undoubtedly had a devastating toll on that community. But creating a cause of action to recover compensation for these wrongs is just one step in the path toward healing. Tulsa, said Johnson, there is substantial evidence that shows government officials, including the police and National Guard, were complicit in the massacre 100 years ago this month. Survivors have sought reparations through the courts before, but judges ruled that the statute of limitations for damages had expired, despite the fact that some survivors filed claims in June of 1921, only days after the massacre. But they were denied. In 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear reparation case appeal. Denise Heath, author of Human Rights Watch report, The Case for Reparations in Tulsa, Oklahoma, noted that victims and descendants of the 1923 Rosewood Massacre in Florida received reparations. Victims and descendants of a forced sterilization program in North Carolina also received reparations. Legislative remedy is incredibly important post any serious or gross human rights violations such as Tulsa Massacre. DeMario Simmons, the lead attorney in the lawsuit filed last year by Tulsa survivors, noted that Congress paid reparations to Japanese internment camp survivors and to 9/11 survivors. It's important for Congress in the United States of America to say what happened to these people in Greenwood was wrong, said Simmons, executive director of Justice for Greenwood Foundation. We have power to remedy it. We should remedy it. We must have accountability for what happened in Greenwood. That's for sure. That is for sure. That right there is just like what others say about reparations. No, you know, really, your family, you saying all that. No reparations. I mean, you've been living good and so forth. You know, if you want to talk about some reparations, I know that the city of Evansville, Illinois, have filed for reparations because when many American Africans moved to Evanston, they redlined them. They put them in a community. This was documented, and they showed the effects, the economic effects that it had. And so there, through the Illinois State, I don't know if the Illinois State Supreme Court or whatever, they showed that this had had an adverse economic impact on their community overall. And they're talking about giving them reparations. The brothers and sisters and the descendants of Evanston, Illinois. Because I believe in reparations. Reparations are important for us as African people because of the wrong that has been done to us. You know, and for us not to seek reparations does a dishonor and a disservice to our ancestors who suffered tremendously. When you're talking about hundreds of years of forced labor, no compensation, when you talk about having your name and your culture and your traditions and your religion, all of it eliminated, that you couldn't do anything about it. And even how egregious it was in Tulsa for them not to say a damn thing, and you better not say a damn thing about it, because there are people in Tulsa who are just talking about this and saying, I didn't know that happened. Just like they did with Rosewood. They wiped it off the map. You couldn't find Rosewood in Florida. They wiped it off the map. We're dealing with a people who are envious and jealous and mean-spirited. And so here is a community, just like in Rosewood, that band together, but in Tulsa on a much larger scale. These brothers and sisters had wealth based on the economics of the oil industry at the time. And so they were able to have hotels, movie theaters, nightclubs, banks. There were so many businesses in the Greenwood, Archer, and Pine district. So many. And these Caucasians just needed just something so they could vamp on that community. Well, Dick Nolan, who shines shoes in the downtown area, couldn't use the bathroom except for at this one office building at the top floor. They allowed you to use the bathroom there. And that's what he was going to do. And, of course, elevators at the time in 1921, they're not like it. You press the button, you know, and you go to the floor that you request after pressing the button. It's flesh. It's just, you know, easy on, easy off. Well, they had an elevator operator, young Caucasian girl. And sometimes you're not flesh and you may, you know, trip or stumble. And that's what happened to Dick Nolan. And he fell against her. And she screamed, understandably. But, excuse me, I'm sorry. Somebody heard the screams, you know, and they thought that this brother was attempting to assault her. And that individual ran with it. And from that incident, that sparked it. In fact, when he was supposedly at the jail, the crowd was anxious to get him and to kill him. And some brothers who had just came back from World War I, who had guns, you know, they surrounded the courthouse and arguments ensued. And a shot was fired and it was on. It was on. And they started shooting at each other. And then a call went out to all Caucasians in the immediate area. And boy, I'm quite sure they were licking their chops to shoot and kill some damn body. And all of them came ready to kill brothers and sisters in Tulsa. They'd come into the home, ransack it, take all the things that were valuable, and then burn it to the ground. And if they didn't kill you, they rounded you up and put you into these camps that the American Red Cross had provided, or just tied them up and just held them till they could put them in those camps. Over 300 of our people. I don't remember the total of Caucasians that died, you know. But this is a devastation that needs to be redressed. And it would be great for this sister, these two sisters, and that brother to see this for their family and their ancestors. And for us and the brothers and sisters in Tulsa, and for us as American Africans, wherever we are in this country, to see it happen. Because it deserves to happen, considering what happened to them. We're going to, I got a song I'm going to play. And it's the Shaw Brothers. It's the Shaw Brothers. And The Sun Will Rise Again. Doc Shaw featuring Lester Shaw. And The Sun Will Rise Again. We have a caller. Caller 469, 469. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well today. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad. Hey, before I go too far, how many people do you all have in your party?
Oh, okay. I think we have about six.
About six.
But
I'm gonna see if I can get some more tickets.
Okay, that would be great. Yeah, I'm arriving tomorrow, and so okay. I'll give you a call when I get in.
Okay, please do.
I will.
Let me add a little bit on to the
sure. Please do. Dick, please do
to the Dick.
Dick Nolan
thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boy, I'm hitting the blank. I know one of his relatives real well. And what it was, Sarah Page and Dick Rowland, yeah, they had an affair going on.
They did. I know that. I heard about that.
They had an affair going on, and what I think happened is that he was on the elevator. You know how it was. They were young, mm-hmm. and he probably fell up against her, and she probably just did what young girls do. That's mm-hmm. what I'm thinking had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happened is that when they went to court, they wanted her to testify against him. She never did.
Right.
And he eventually left. I believe he went to Kansas City. And shortly thereafter, she left Tulsa and went there as well. So it was a little bit more to it. Now, 60 Minutes was here, I think it was last year. And they were there. And this lady was there, and she testified or she spoke up at 60 Minutes. And she was saying that they had an affair. So, yeah, it wasn't like they didn't know one another. They knew one another pretty well. So, I just wanted to put that out there mm-hmm. because there's a lot of things out there. That's one of the things that they don't talk about as well.
Okay.
They, if you read it in the book, they'll put it out there like, well, they may have had a relationship going on, mm-hmm. but yeah, they were rubbing ankles. So,
okay.
We just want to put that out. And what this lady said was that during the hearings, they brought up that they didn't think that it was possible for two people from different races to care about one another. And you know how that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it was more to it than just his stumbling up against her, and she was shocked, and she just, she just lost it. It wasn't like that. They had an affair going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to chip in and put that in.
All right. Thank you, my brother Prince. And I'll see you. See you real soon, man. You
just hang on. All right then, brother.
All right, peace. Yeah. We're going to play this piece, The Sun Will Rise Again, Doc Shaw featuring Lester Shaw and Ristel Shaw, and talking about Tulsa, Oklahoma. That's what we're talking about today. So this is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're going to play this piece, and after the piece, stick around, be right back, and hopefully you'll join this conversation. There's a lot of people in the queue. All you got to do is hit star twice, or dial 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspective here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. On Mondays, and all times are going to give our Eastern times, on Mondays from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia, Acres of Diamonds, with Brother Jihad Ahmed, followed by from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Nataki Kamban. And then from, after that program is Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra, and that's from 9 to 10. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report on Wednesdays from 8 to 9. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Sister Talk with host LaWanda Chambers. And then from 7 to 9, the Sankofa Elders Council on Saturdays. And then if it's Sunday and at 7 p.m. Eastern, it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We're talking today about the massacre that occurred in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And devastating as it was, you know, it has to be dealt with. You know, I think that's one thing that this country does not want to deal with. And, of course, you see that right now with all this backlash of the 1619 Project, this so-called critical race theory. There's serious backlash. You know, they have some states who are saying we will not teach this. You know, we will not have this in our schools. Because you know why? They can't handle the truth. They can't deal with it. When Trayvon Martin and all the other things that were happening about probably almost close to 10 years ago, this Caucasian lady named Dr. D'Angelo, she was giving sessions with other Caucasians, just Caucasians, you know, And what she noticed, that when she talked about what was happening, they didn't want to hear it. She called it Caucasian or white fragility. They were fragile. They didn't want to hear what they had done. They didn't want to hear the fact that they came here and took this land and murdered the indigenous people. Once again, I'm promoting two documentaries that you need to see. Of course, The Great Pyramid K, 2019, showing you how the pyramids were built and who built them and other things that we had done around the world. Great Pyramid K, 2019. Yes, I know it's 3.5 hours long, but brothers, it's well worth it, and sisters. And the other one is Exterminate All the Brutes. Raoul Peck's documentary in 4 segments. Each segment is about 1 hour long. Definitely worth it. Because they show you in Raoul Peck's piece the amount of indigenous groups that were on this, that were in America specifically, and how they were wiped out. In fact, the opening scene talks about this Caucasian going into the Seminole area in Florida, saying he wants his property back. And if you give me my property back, I will let you go to a place where we have signed for you, the Trail of Tears in Oklahoma. But it's very deep, very deep. I want to go into that because we're talking about the Tulsa Massacre. And that's what it was. One of the most violent episodes of dispossession in U.S. history began May 31st, 1921 in Greenwood, a thriving American-African neighborhood in Tulsa. From the 31st to June 1st, deputized Caucasians killed more than 300 American Africans. They looted and burned to the ground 40 square blocks, 1,265 American African homes, including hospitals, schools, churches, and destroyed 150 businesses. Caucasian deputies and members of the National Guard arrested and detained 6,000 American African Tulsans who were released only upon being vouched. Those who were released were only released upon being vouched for by Caucasian employers or other Caucasian people. 9,000 American Africans were left homeless and lived in tents well into the winter of 1921. This assault was met by a brave but unsuccessful armed defense of their community by some of the brothers who had fought in World War I and others. This description is by Linda Christensen of the Rethinking Schools in the introduction to her lesson, Burning Tulsa, the Legacy of Black Dispossession. She goes on to describe why and how she and her colleagues teach about the Tulsa Massacre, often described in textbooks as a race riot. Once again, there's no such thing as race. It was not a race riot. It was a massacre. They vamped on our community. We didn't want students to get lost in the history of Tulsa. Though it needs to be remembered, we wanted them to recognize the historical patterns of stolen wealth in Black, brown, and poor communities. We wanted them to connect the current economic struggles of people of color by staying alert to these dynamics from the past. We wanted them to see that in many ways, Tulsa and other American African communities are still burning, still being looted. I know that there have been all kinds of, Craft is escaping me. I'm going to tell you, man, I got to take some stuff for my memory, but I just keep forgetting to take it. Lovecraft. Yeah. The HBO series, they have a segment in there on Tulsa. It's a deep, deep segment. In there on Tulsa. And of course, there was two other things. One was animated, dealing with the Tulsa massacre. But once again, because of the 1776 piece that Trump put out about we're going to teach about America greatness. We don't want to teach about how bad and evil. You damn right, because that's what it is. It's bad and evil. This is an evil ass country and an evil ass system of exploitation, domination. And it needs to be talked about. In fact, if there's going to be any justice, which I doubt, it needs to be restructured. There should be redistribution of wealth. You know, that's funny. I remember in a conversation about redistribution of wealth. That's one thing Caucasians don't want to deal with. They're adamant against it. Even though they know that there's a 1% of Caucasians who have billions upon billions of dollars. But in their mind, because they're so individualistic and so greedy and selfish, that they too believe that somehow a lottery, an inheritance, or whatever, luck just maybe falls me, and I could be with that 1%. And so, no, we don't want fairness. In fact, it's a big thing about challenging socialism. Now, as African people, we understand what socialism means and what it is and how important it is for the survival of everybody. But under a capitalist system, of course, is, you know, the top people get and everybody else don't. And there be some folks that, because see, in a capitalist system, you have to have poor people. In order for me to have all that I have, a whole bunch of people ain't going to have a damn thing. They ain't going to have nothing. And I could care less and give less than a rat's ass about them. That's capitalism. There are some related stories. In 2000, after 2 years of meeting, the Tulsa Riot Commission recommended Friday that direct payments be made to survivors and descendants of the 11-member panel also called for a memorial to the dead, scholarships, and tax checkoffs to fund economic development in the Greenwood District. That wasn't done. It wasn't done. This is sadly one of the countless massacres in this country. Massacres in the U.S. Most of these massacres were designed to suppress voting rights, land ownership, economic advancement, education, freedom of press, religion, gay rights, and our labor rights for American Africans, Latinos, indigenous people, Asians, and immigrants. While often referred to as race riots, they were massacres to maintain European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege, better known as white supremacy. I don't use white supremacy. Number one, they're not supreme. That's for damn sure. And they ain't white. They're Europeans. They're Caucasians. Like, we ain't black. We Africans. Find more resources below and teach about the Tulsa Massacre, including Burnt Out of My Home, Unearthing the Silent Voices of the Tulsa Massacre and Related Events of the Red Summer of 1919. Yep, 2 years ago, coming upon the Red Summer, all kinds of. So Burned Out of My Homes and History, Unearthing the Silent Voices of the Tulsa Massacre, Burning Tulsa, the Legacy of Black Dispossession, Remembering the Red Summer, which textbooks seem eager to forget, Teaching for Black Lives, If We Must Die, a novel of Tulsa's 1921 Greenwood Riot, and then the other massacres, Ebenezer Creek Massacre, the Colfax Massacre. The KKK carried out the Colfax Massacre and a Republican victory in 1872. The Homburg Massacre. A black militia was accused of blocking a road and punished with the Homburg Massacre. This was a Reconstruction era voter suppression massacre. The Polk County Massacre. Caucasian workers murdered black workers in Arkansas who were coming to work on the railroads. the Slocum massacres in Texas. Citizens in small towns, predominantly American African towns of Slocum, Texas, were massacred. Elaine, Arkansas. American African farmers were massacred in Elaine, Arkansas for their efforts to fight for better pay and higher cotton prices. A white mob shot at them, and the farmers returned their fire in self-defense. Estimated range of 100 to 1,000 killed. And 66 survivors were indicted for inciting the riot. The ones that survived were in sight. And, of course, the 1923 Rosewood Massacre in the town of Rosewood. And there, you know what? There are many others. I know you probably heard of the Devil's Punch Bowl in Louisiana, right after the so-called freedom of our people rounded those brothers and sisters up and put them in a concentration camp. All of them died. The Devil's Punch Bowl, Natchez, Mississippi. So this is a constant thing. And I guess for me, and what I try to do with this radio program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, is put something on our minds. Get us to think. We're at war for our minds. The problem that we have is because we are not thinking clearly, and we're not thinking collectively. We're not thinking for ourselves. And somehow too many of us don't want to. There's a saying, if we knew better, we do better. I know you probably heard it. Well, many of us don't want to know. Because if we know, that means we are bound to. And so some of us are so damn lazy and shiftless and don't care. Because you're made not to care, brothers and sisters. In America, you're made not to care about each other. This is, America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's America. That's what America's about. You have a caller. Good afternoon, caller.
Good afternoon. Good morning, Baba Oshi.
Hey, this is my good brother, Brother Paul from the UK. How are things over in the UK, man?
Well, that's a very good question. Where do you want me to start?
Hey, man, never mind. Never mind.
Well, hey. let me just sum it up for you, yeah? I mean, obviously, I can't speak for everybody, but I can only speak in my own observations. And, you know, my observations are somewhat prejudiced in the fact that I'd like to identify myself as being slightly conscious,
right? Very on. Conscious. Right.
So therefore, yeah. I may see things different than those who choose to bury their heads in the sand and pretend like everything's fantastic. You understand?
Right.
But I think I don't think it's any different than the situation you find yourself in as black people.
No, it's everywhere, Paul. As you know, you've studied enough. You know. You know, Europeans, when they came out of that dark age, medieval age, land poor, resource poor, and people poor, and they said, you know what, we made war amongst ourselves, but we're going to come together on everybody outside of us, kicking the Sephardic Jews out, kicking the Moors out of Spain, and they solidified, and they became this, you know, and then they went around the world claiming everybody's stuff in the name of. They didn't come to bargain. They didn't come to trade. They didn't come to, no, they came to take. And they didn't give a damn who was on that land. In fact, the story they tell, there's nobody was on that land. Just like Paul, there was a former legislator here, can't remember where he's from, Santorum. And he said, you know, the Native Americans, they really didn't do anything adding to American culture and so forth. There was a small group of them anyway, so they didn't make any difference because we built this land. We made it the great beacon of hope for people around the world. We did this, you know. but that's what they believe. See? And that's why they're pushing this 1776 as opposed to talking about 16, 19. That's why they're pushing, why they're not going to teach critical race theory. They're not going to come to grips with what they really have done. They want the lie. They want to continue to perpetuate the lie that these people were coming here looking for, you know, they were being persecuted in Europe, particularly in England, and they wanted to come here for religious freedom. And then they came here. They were assisted by the indigenous people. They had a Thanksgiving, and all was well, and they realized we needed more land. And so the indigenous people said, okay, fine, we'll move further west, and you can go ahead and have this land, you know. Stop it. Stop it, man. Bunch of liars.
Well, absolutely. Well, I think, to be honest with you, the lies which have been created is like building a house on sinking sand, and eventually it will sink. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I want to come. Sorry.
What have you heard about the Tulsa massacre and other massacres that have happened here in the United States?
That's a very good question, because let me just try and tie it all together. Growing up, I certainly never heard of it under the educational curriculum in the UK. I never ever spoke to anybody who knew anything about it or even mentioned it. And even when I so-called became conscious reading materials, books, etc., I never read about it, so it was non-existent. I think one day I must have come across it through social media. I was tied up in certain social media platforms, and we were sharing different things, and I came across it, and I was reading about it, and I was shocked. I was very surprised that this thing actually had happened, and I'd never heard of it. And most people I spoke to, 99.9%, had never heard of it either. So it kind of makes me think that, you know, you talk about a lie, and I describe a lie as like building a house on sinking sand, and it's going to crumble. Now, in the time when I left school in about 1988, so from that year, from that, say, 1989, 1990, when I started to read a lot, from that time to this, I can honestly testify to the fact that those of us who have our social media and who have used these platforms, maybe through work purposes, hobbies, etc., have certainly become more woke as to what's happening around the world and these events.
True. That's
so
true.
That makes me realize that I done a couple history and black history lessons in my daughter's school. They asked me to do it. My daughter thought I'd be best placed to do it for some reason or the other. But I took it on, and they gave me 2 years in a junior school, year two and year three, over a week to talk to. And then I had to pick a subject. One of the things I told them, because it was quite interesting, because they had them in the hall and they had all the teachers on left and right side. One of the things I said to them is that their generation is going to be different than the teachers' generations and even my generation, because the access to information is going to be at their fingertips.
Right.
Yeah. And they're going to be forced to wake up. Yeah. And, you know, even my oldest daughter, she's what, 33. I mean, I had a conversation a couple of years ago, and she was saying to me, Dad, things have changed, Dad, since your time. I'm not that old. I'm 51. But she said, things have changed since your time. And, you know, I was a bit, I didn't want to tackle on it. I wanted to, sometimes you've got to see for yourself. You've got a job in the parliament, in the media, in parliament, believe it or not. And, I just thought, don't worry, sooner or later you're going to see what I'm talking about, rather than me having to explain to you. Because sometimes the better way to see things is when you learn, when it's really in your face. And the more you push, especially in employment, you're going to see it in its wicked, honest fashion. And lo and behold, She did see it. And, you know, with all this Black Lives Matter stuff and all this stuff, she obviously now realizes is that it wasn't just my time or your time. This is a consistency.
Right.
This is part of a systematic approach of white extremism on the planet. And it's undeniable. So with all the lies they tell in their educational trichology systems, yeah, technology has forced people to wake up, but they can stay in denial. They can pretend, you know what I mean? Because a lot of people do pretend and act like they see, but they don't see because of their own agendas, for their own personal agendas. But the reality is that you know, the truth is the truth, and the truth is going to set you free. And I absolutely stand by that. You know what I'm saying? A lie is just built like building a house on sinking sand. You can keep building, but sooner or later it's going to sink. And that's the problem with the extremists, because the extremist knows that it's sinking and he's panicking to hold on. And I've heard you say the same similar thing. And that is the truth. So, you know, these things about Tulsa, Oklahoma, the reality is that when I listen to it, I so feel empathy for the people and what they had to go through, the trauma they had to, you know, I just sit there and think, and I think, man, it must have been terrifying for them. It must have been absolutely terrifying, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they didn't expect it. But I often think these events here, Brother Ochi, I often think that we are here as a people to learn. That's why we're here. We must learn. We must learn from the past. We must learn by our mistakes and our successes. We must learn. One of the things I think, and this is may sound a bit harsh coming from a defensive point of view, the one thing which, when I listen to it, comes out of it is that, yeah, okay, you rightfully said there were a few people who came in for the Second World War and they were taught in arms and they could bear arms. But then what I thought to myself is that why didn't they have a militia? Why didn't they have a militia prepared? Didn't they see the signs? Didn't they know where they were? Okay, they were successful, they were preparing, they were professionals, but didn't they not recognize that this devil is going to be a devil and prepare? Because the bottom line is, yeah, if even if they had given and killed, and I say kill, and I mean what I say, kill 3/4 of those white perpetrators, right? Kill them dead. 3/4 of them. And even if they would have lost, that would have set a precedent, you understand? Because human nature is such, yeah, unless you show them that you know, you're willing to, and I'm not going to say die, you're willing to live, because I don't come here to die, you know, die anytime. I come here to live, and I'm going to do everything I can to live. So therefore, you know, and the lesson out of that for me is, from that time to this, have we learned the lesson of preparation? Are we prepared for these devils?
You know, that's a good question, Brother Paul, because that's what's happening now in many areas. That's what's happening now. People are talking about, you know, preparing.
You know, and you know what, right? You know what? And I know they're listening, and I hope they're listening to this, because I mean it from the bottom of my soul. You know, I feel I was born to go to war with these people. I was born for it. And anytime it starts, let it be so. I just feel that in my soul, and I've always felt that. I have no fear of them. I have no fear of dying.
I say,
never.
Yeah.
Right? So the bottom line is, yeah, you know, they know it. They absolutely know it, because they can watch the social media. I've even seen in my own time period, you know, I grew up in with these technologies. I've seen how things change, how people, ordinary people, have become aware. I've seen it. So I know they're panicking. I know they can see it. They can see it clearly, based on changes, you know. So, you know, and I can see how they're acting. I can see what they're doing with the pandemic, with the with all these false red flags they keep bringing on, you know, and they grab for Africa and what they're doing in Africa. I can see how they're responding. And so for me, the lesson that Tulsa, Oklahoma, is that we are the solution to our own problem, and we must know ourselves, and we must know where we've gone wrong and where our successes is. And for me, one of the problems they had, that they didn't have an armed and prepared
defense
force ready to meet them,
right.
ready to meet them, Right. Yeah. Well, and I'm sure, because I know these cowards, I'm sure if they would have met that, they would have run for their lives. You know, we got to stop pretending the black man can't fight and the black man can't kill. We got to stop pretending that we can. We're quick to kill each other, so we can kill, and we can kill them just as easily. But we're not prepared because they have put this indoctrination in our mind that, you know, that we can't defend ourselves against them. We can. And no one can convince me we can't. Nobody, nothing on this planet can convince me that we can't. We can. No matter what armory they build, no matter what defense they build, we can take it. Because the reason why, because we come in truth. We are the truth.
Right.
And that's why they keep lying. That's why they have to lie. That's why they have to push these propaganda machines. That's why they have to continually, 24/7, be on this. Because they know the moment we wake up, it's all over for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the lesson.
Right. And see, this wake up is a waking up from a mental malaise that we have been experiencing for the last few hundred years, and this belief that somehow we can appeal to Caucasians' moral nature, that we can make them understand our suffering and what they have done to us, and they will feel bad about it, and they will say, you know, oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, you are allowed to come in. We are allowed to share. It's not going to happen. It hasn't happened. It's not happening, and it ain't going to happen. So what we must do in our wake up to embrace ourselves, embrace who we are, identify ourselves as being African, loving ourselves, loving each other, and being willing and able to defend that. I agree with you. No, you know, they had some people who had came back from World War I. They had rifles, but they did not have. Maybe if they did, it wasn't adequate, obviously, because, you know, you had a call from the Caucasians after this incident happened. Once those shots were fired, people were coming from around all, you know, everybody came from out of state to kill some black folks, you know. So that's why, to me, whatever groups that are out there that are forming gun clubs, that are buying weapons and so forth, because that's what time it is. Let me take some other calls. I got a caller here. Mama Nabantu. Mama Nabantu. Good afternoon.
Are you there?
I'm here. There? Yes, you are. You're on.
Oh, wow. I didn't know I had pink. Well, anyway, I'm headed to Tulsa right now.
Okay. And, yeah, that's right. You're headed for Tulsa. That's right. Well, listen, dear, you go on ahead. I appreciate that. I loved yesterday evening.
But I have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
Is it a kill that he lives up there in Tulsa?
I'm sorry, say that again.
The brother lives in Tulsa.
Who's that?
It's the same brother. Is his name a kill?
No, uh-uh. No, the brother that lives in Tulsa that you need to contact is Chief Eagle Mawale. Chief Eagle Mawale. I'll send you his information.
Yeah, because I went on there trying to get a ticket. And I said, wow, it went in 25 minutes. They were all gone.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
But I had a question about the survivors. The sister, Viola Ford Fletcher.
Yes. Yes.
Her brother is Van Hughes.
Right. Ellis. Right. He's 100 years old. He's 100 years old. Miss Fletcher is 107. And the other sister is 106.
Right. So the question I had was, the brother and the sister was, his last name is Ford, which is the same name as his father. And her last name is Fletcher, which is probably, you know, a married name. And prior to that, Ford. But her mother's name is Ellis, and Van Ford Ellis.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out, maybe there was a different father between the two of them.
I don't know.
And yeah. The other thing is that my family was in that area, and their last name is Ellis. My father's family is Ellis.
Oh, okay. I see.
and trying to find a connection, whether or not we're descendants or not. So I do have a genealogist working on it right now to find out. But I thought the other information that the brother said about that elevator incident, that they knew each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they did because he worked nearby every day, and she's the one that found the elevator.
Right. And that was the only restroom that could be used by us in that downtown Tulsa area. Yeah.
That particular elevator?
Yeah. You know, so it took you to, I think there was a restroom on the top floor of that building.
Oh, so he was trying to go up to the restroom?
Yes.
Okay. That was interesting. Very interesting story. Okay, well.
Listen, safe travel. I'll see you in Tulsa.
All right, okay.
All right, Mama Nabantu. Peace.
All right, peace.
334-334, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. How you been?
Oh, man. I've been bouncing all over the place.
Yeah.
But I wanted to especially chime in today. Because it's that 100 years now since Tulsa, and it's just so interesting the energies that's starting to come around with recognizing that 100 years. So, but yeah, you know, this is work time for me, and so look, I haven't called you in quite some time.
Right, you're right.
So I just wanted to check in with you that, you know, I still support your efforts and what you do. I may not be on as frequently as I would love to, but I'm supporting the efforts here.
Yeah, you always have been, and you're always seeing good information, brother. I appreciate that. I really do appreciate you, man. Yeah, one day I'm going to get down to Montgomery. Let's go to the Justice Initiative, man, to the museum and the where they have the hangings at, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And should you do that, just, you know, shoot me an email, and I'll be happy to, you know, meet with you, and maybe we could get a chance to drive out to Selma and bring you other spots and stuff. So, yeah, I'd be happy to be your kind of like tour guide of sorts. How about that?
All right, my brother. Thanks a lot, brother. Brother Lusk.
You're welcome.
Brother Lusk. Appreciate that. Yeah.
All right. Much love. Peace, brother.
Yeah. So, Brother Paul. Brother Paul, yeah. You know, you know, these people have an origin, and that origin is in Europe. And these people, Spanish, what do you want to call them, Spanish or Portuguese, Germans, Italians, you know, whatever you want to call them from their noted country. But one thing that they have been and what they've done to humanity is devastating. And I know the British, you know, I have deep disdain for the, you know, for France, but I have even deeper disdain for the British, because the British, you know, now they have this image, especially here in America, the royals and all the royals. And of course, what Britain has done, but they were one of the main colonizers. In fact, they still have a lot of colonies along with France. They were one of the main enslavers. In fact, they were enslaving our people for other countries. They cut deals with other countries, you know. They've done some dastardly things. What about the Mau Mau in Kenya? What do you know about the Mau Mau and how the British did something as just as horrific as what the United States Caucasians have done to a people whose land that they stole, you know, and imprisoned.
Yes, yeah. That, the Mau Mau are a very interesting set of people. That, from what I understand, is that, and I stand to be corrected. I can't remember exactly what Mau Mau means, but I think it's a derogatory term to describe these group of people who originate from Kenya. Africans who originate from Kenya. I know that what they did, they were trying to break away from the so-called British Empire, and get back their independence and get back their sovereign land. And in doing so, the British Army basically shot them with live rounds and killed them, massacred them, chopped them up with machetes, raped the women, killed the children, just all done all sorts of absolutely disgusting and nefarious acts to suppress their uprising. More recently, I think about five and 10 years, they brought an action.
Oh, a legal action? They brought a legal action. Great. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they brought a legal action for reparation and compensation for the notorious, the nefarious act carried out by the British Army. And as I understand it, they were successful.
Okay.
But the problem, from a conscious point of view, and people who took interest in the case, one of the elders who speaks a lot on this, he says that the problem with their success is that a lot of the money which they gained from the reparation from the verdict went to the lawyers. So. Well, one of the things, and we've got a great guy here called, we've got a great elder here called Cecil Gutsmore, who talks on these affairs, and he's very adept in reparations. And he sounds a warning that, you know, that when we allow certain groups, like in the Caribbean, we have CARICOM, which is a government type group. He sends a warning that if we sit back and allow them to take control of reparations, the same thing's going to happen, because. You've got some people in the Caribbean appointed under the Queen's Council QC who are working on reparations, but there's a lot of suspicion in their real intentions. And we've got groups down here who suggest that why the people themselves should, you know, be more adept with what's going on. So come back to the Mau Maus. You know, what I understand is that they did bring an action against the British government. They were successful. But they weren't really, and you know, most of them, a lot of them had died because they were in old age. And the ones which were able to benefit from him, they were, I think they was in their 80s and 90s. As to how much they really benefited.
Right. Well, for them personally, not too much, but for their descendants or for their relatives, you know, their children or their grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever, that was a benefit. But, of course, the horror that they had experienced because of it, you know, and to some they said you really can't put a price on that. Just like when they talk about the captivity of us as African people, you really can't put a price on it. But we should be compensated for what we had gone through, you know, because truly it was a crime that the Europeans inflicted upon people of color, particularly African people, was a crime against humanity. It's all humanity. And to me, there's only a few people who have actually experienced genocide, experienced their whole removal, extermination, just as that documentary that I keep promoting, Exterminate All the Brutes. On HBO, Exterminate All the Brutes. If you have streaming, that works better because you can watch all four of them back to back. And then, of course, the other documentary is Great Pyramid K, 2019, which talks about how the pyramids were built and who built them. It wasn't no mulattoes. It wasn't no aliens. Okay? Wasn't none of that. Sure wasn't no damn Caucasians. It was Africans, melanated, deep melanated Africans. But, you know, the problem is that even though we can prove these things, they have the influence because of their money and because of how dictatorial they are to squash stuff. You know, you can present all the evidence in the world, and still, you may not seek the redress that you're looking for. And there are no statues, like when they said for the people in Tulsa, for those claims, for their property. Well, people were killed for that loss of property. So there is no statute of limitations as far as I'm concerned. But, of course, it's their laws and they twist them the way they want to. And as I stated earlier, for so long, for decades, you weren't even allowed to talk about this. It was not to be mentioned. It sure wasn't going to be in any kind of school curriculum. When I visited Tulsa in January of last year, we went to a school, and that school dealt with the issue of Tulsa. They had streets named. They had Greenwood, they had Archer, and Pine Streets. They talked about the map. They talked about what happened, who did what, how, and so forth. All of the businesses that Tulsa had, the theaters. They talked about all of this. That is part of their curriculum. They wanted those students to understand and know what has happened. And, of course, for that constant fight for redress, that constant fight to right the wrongs. But once again, brothers and sisters, we're dealing with a people. We're dealing with a people that have no conscience. You got to say something, Brother Paul?
You know, as he was talking, I was just thinking, Baba Ochi, and I don't know if these things have been done. So I'm just thinking off the top of my head, because, for instance, we had not a great disaster as Tulsa, Oklahoma, but I was thinking and relating it to the same. There was an incident in the early 70s. Or say early 80s in this country, where a house party, a firebomb was thrown by some racists, and 13 young people died in the house fire. And each year they had a march, and we talked about it, and no one was ever held responsible for it. They never caught the perpetrator or whatever.
What? And, wait a minute. You have Scotland Yard. Doesn't Scotland Yard? They always get this impression that Scotland Yard are finding, they'll get to the bottom of it, or you can go get Sherlock Holmes.
Well, you know, that's another discussion, because we can tell you about what we call, refer to as institutional racism. It's no different than how the police turn a blind eye when it happens to be people of color or black people, you know? Mm-hmm. So we suffer, unfortunately, from the same fate.
Exactly. Same people, man.
Yeah. So, but as I was listening to, I was young at the time it happened, and I didn't learn about it until, I was maybe in my late 20s. I learned about this thing, although it didn't even happen very far from me. I always remember thinking that I think this is shared among us. It seems to me, and I might be wrong on this, Baba Ochi, is that with these things here, we march, we celebrate respectfully, we do the respectful thing. But to me, we don't seem to have real strategies. Like, let me say what I mean here. For instance, on this thing, what happened here in London, when I asked the questions, has a book been written on it? Nobody's written a book. Nobody's bothered to write a book on it. What documents, what papers have we written to an inquiry? Has there been any inquiry? Not some we've gone to the master to ask for an inquiry. Inquiries which we've sat down and tried to identify what really happened. And usually there's none. It's almost as if we're waiting for the white man to do it. It's almost as if we wait for the white man to do everything. You understand? If he must bring us the solution, he ain't going to bring us the solution. And I often wonder why we don't do these things.
Yeah.
And when I'm thinking about Tulsa, Oklahoma, no, I didn't know about this. No one hardly knows about it. But we could make a film on it. You know, in America, I know there are people with a lot of money there. There are people who are, in Hollywood and all kind of directors and et cetera, book writers. Has a book been written on this?
There are so many things that, I didn't know this. I'm almost 70. So in my schooling, in the public schools in the city of Milwaukee, you didn't learn about nobody except Booker T. Washington and George Washington Carver. You weren't going to learn about anybody who resisted. You were not going to learn about anybody who fought back. You're not going to learn about Harriet Tubman. You're not even going to learn about Frederick Douglass. That's all you're going to learn until later, until I got into high school and we walked out citywide for Black Studies, you know. So you're not going to learn about that. But today, that information is there. They had done so many things on Tulsa. They had a number of commissions. Hey, oh, Jay. Hey, Jay.
Hey, listen, man. I'm sorry to cut in right quick. Man, I had an emergency today, man, and I couldn't listen to this show. Is your guest still there?
I have no guest. All I did was talk about the Tulsa Massacre.
Massacre. Because what I wanted to ask the guest if he was on, and I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to hear the show. I just wanted to know, man, what do you feel is going to be the narrative to this week? Are they going to try to indemnify the white boy, or are they going to tell the truth about no good, filthy, stinking, you know what?
Well, you know, well, Jay, let me say this, man. I believe that it's already been out there for so long, and they have to. They can't do what Caucasians want to do today with this. Don't teach about critical race theory. Don't teach about 1619. Right. You know, we're only going to talk about what good, because we're not bad people. We're not evil people. We're good people. And even though we, you know, we felt that we had a manifest destiny. It was our right. God has bestowed upon us these things that we must take this land and we must do. Yeah, all of that bull. But let me say this.
So they're going to try and clean. So you think, or you feel as though they're going to try and clean it up a little? Because there's no way they can clean it
up. No, there isn't.
There's no way
right.
they can make it into anything other than it was total slaughter, oppression,
right.
murder.
Exactly.
You know, now, what they may try to do is lie about the reasons why it happened, that it wasn't because of envy, jealousy, and things of that nature.
But that's the reason.
But it's going to be real interesting how they clean this sugar, honey, iced tea up.
Well,
because that's my main concern. And I'm like, my concern is the dishonesty that Black folks are going to do in regards to try and make the narrative is, well, let's forgive them, but also let's seek some sort of.
Well, let me say this to you. Let me say this, Jay, before, because I only got a few more minutes, that I realize that there are some in Tulsa that, you know, that may be their mindset, that may be their attitude, but there's a great number of brothers and sisters in Tulsa based upon the last decade or two or three since this has been known. Because I remember watching Nightline when this Caucasian who was in the I don't know if it was state government or, you know, Tulsa's government, city government, but he was adamant about no money to be given. In fact, he said, I might think about a monument, a plaque here or there, but nothing should be done. It happened, you know, get over it, you know, statute of limitations. So, you know, so be it. You know, that's the mindset. And you know what, Jay, that's still the mindset generally. But the bottom line is there's a strong group of brothers and sisters in the city of Tulsa who understand they need restitution and they will fight to that nth degree. And you might have seen the national news a few days ago. That's why the brother who was supposed to be my guest last week, Wednesday, he wasn't there because last week they were at a hearing where the sister who's 107, Mother Fletcher.
I know about that. Yeah, I know about that.
They all testified, you know. So anyway, there it is, Jay. I'll let you know, because when I come back on next week, Wednesday, I'm gonna give everybody a lowdown.
Okay, so gonna be on Friday or Monday.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, man. When you're there, if you get an opportunity, you know, just text me or something like that.
Okay.
Let me know how the festivities are. And look, man, please be safe, brother.
Right
you know
on,
what
Jay.
I mean? Be cautious of your surroundings, because you know. The virus is still out there, bro.
You know, it sure is.
So definitely be safe and enjoy your travels, man. And after Wednesday, I know you're going to come back and tell her the vaccine works. The vaccine works.
Right.
Talk to you later,
bro. Okay, Jay. Hotel, brother. All right, brother Paul, you want any last few comments, maybe before I get up out of here?
Yeah, quickly. I think if the communities and those interested could get together and set up a film company and fund the film and take the profits of the proceeds of that film and reinvest it into education.
Cool.
And use the money to eventually take the government to court and get some reparations for the people.
Yeah, because a couple of people talked about filming or making a film of the Tulsa massacre. Danny Glover talked about it. There's a few others that talked about it. Basketball player Russell Westbrook, basketball player, he also talked about it.
That'd be a good thing.
Yeah, it would be. Brother Paul, thank you, man. You have a blessed and wonderful day, and in a good week. When you hope you can come back on again Wednesday next week.
Right,
Wednesday.
Quick, Oshie.
Yeah.
Right, quick, Oshie. LeBron James and his business partner have a special, I think, on CNN about the whole Tulsa situation that they put together that's going to air in a day or two, I think. If you can, check it out.
Oh, I sure
Paul,
will.
It's going to be on CNN.
Okay, good heads
LeBron
up.
LeBron James and his partner. They did something on the Tulsa. It's going to be all I'm saying is this. It's going to be interesting on what the narrative is and how they explain the narrative. That's all I care about.
I hear
Hotel.
You. Hotel brothers. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in the hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a great and wonderful week and weekend, and I'll see you back here next week, Wednesday. Please be here. Peace, family.